it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Sports Radio 610 presents Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast.
We coming to eighth time. Let's get the work in, man. Let's go.
Great day. Great day. Oh, give me some juice, baby.
Oh, yeah.
Let's do it.
Oh, yeah. Let's go. Let's go. Get fired up, man. Football Friday, week two, and college football week three. Got a lot of good college football this weekend. Coming after you, Aggies. Talk about that later in the show. But we're fired up, man. Football Friday. It's going to be a football Monday, too, because the Texans are on Monday night. What's going on, everybody? Welcome in on a football Friday. Appreciate you getting up with us. We are with you till 10 a.m. this morning. We got a lot to get to on the show. Got a lot for you kids out there, so let's get to it. I'm Sean Pendergast. Seth's already got his H-Town gear on. Seth, the game's on Monday, just so you know. Pace yourself, all right?
Yeah, I wasn't going like full Homer or anything this morning. This is the shirt in the rotation.
It's a very they're very comfy too. That's a
yeah. So on Monday we're gonna do. You know, you typically during the season you and I are only on for 2 hours on Monday morning, but because of the Monday night game we're gonna end up being on for 4 hours. But we're gonna have Vandermeer for one of those hours and John Harris. Ever heard of him? For one of those other hours. So your normal Monday morning broadcasting will still be there. Plus Sean and Seth, because we'd be sure Vandermeer's pipes are ready for Monday night football.
Hell yeah, man. Yeah, I was texting with Vandy last night. He's fired up about that. I'm fired up. That'll be fun. Getting ready. Normal Payne and Pendergast for a couple hours. And then, yeah, it'll be Texans radio. It'll be a blend of Payne and Pendergast and Vandy and Harris with some friends coming on along the way. I think we're going to get a little ND Kalu action. I think we're going to get a little...
Oh, sweet. I think we're going to get... That's right, yeah, because he's always on Mondays.
Yeah.
Yep. And Andre will be... Yeah, it'll be a good time.
Little Andre Ware action as well. Absolutely. That'll be good.
Will they let us go over and do it at the stadium? Or do you want to do it over at the stadium?
I don't mind. I thought about that.
Might be easier for those guys.
Yeah, that's something to... you know what? We'll get with the bosses after the show. I wouldn't mind. It's a short drive over there, and it makes it... easier to be in the same place. Even if it's not, though, it's going to be a great 4 hours of radio. Today is going to be a great 4 hours of radio because we got a lot of football to get to. No, it's going to be good, Seth. You're going to be great today, man.
We got how could you not be great? How could you not be great when you want the Astros machine that they are? Just go on up there and just, you know what? I applaud them for having the courage to stand in there for Gossman, against Gossman. Inning after inning after inning.
All nine
after,
of them.
I can do this nine times.
Yeah.
Yep.
All nine innings. At least they forced.
What the hell? At least, what in the sweet hell are we doing? What are we doing?
At least in a complete game shutout, they forced him to throw 100 pitches.
100? Oh, boy.
It wasn't 109 or 107. It was exactly 100 pitches.
The guy could go on 3 days rest for the next appearance if he had to.
He wanted to,
you know?
He could. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, the Yankees go on a tear. And the Blue Jays falter or something, just go ahead and throw Gossman out there to get him back on track.
That might have been for me. And look, we're 140 something games into the season now. So anytime something bad happens, it's going to be the worst game. And anytime something good happens, it's going to be the best game. Mostly because now they're tied and really they're in second in the AL West because they lose the tiebreaker to the Mariners. Mariners won in 12 innings last night. Against the Angels.
I know, but man, I mean, we're in the first inning, and how do you both pull off a ball that you're trying to catch but also overrun it at the same
Sanchez
time?
Sanchez is amazing, man.
Jesus Sanchez was a disaster yesterday.
Yeah.
Espada is partly to blame. In the first inning, look, you got a runner on third. Espada pulls the infielders in because – Nobody in the building or baseball trusts this lineup to come back from some kind of an early deficit.
Yeah.
So you pull the infield in
the first inning.
Creates a situation with a pop-up where Jesus Sanchez is flying in. Both your infielders are turning their back to the home plate to try to get it. And, you know, it's Sanchez's ball. There was some kind of, It was just a disaster.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
But if the if the infield weren't in, it would have been an easy pop-up to Jose Altuve.
Right, right. You know, there would be no thinking about it whatsoever.
It was this whole ripple effect that encapsulated everything that is wrong with the Astros right now, which is the infield was in because the offense stinks. The infield was in because this offense is not trusted to come back from a two-run deficit early in a game. And Joe Espada was right. They were not going to come back from a two. This was the worst game of the year. I know that there are other games that we can go back and look and say they played worse. I don't know if there is, actually. It was everything that was bad about everybody involved in this game. Christian Javier came in, and granted, he was the victim of a Jesus Sanchez brain fart or whatever that was, but Javier was not good. Javier was not good. Like, we can't let him off the hook. He was not good. There was other stuff he did to make that situation, that pop fly that dropped, a run-scoring situation. Lance came in and did what he's been doing since he got into the bullpen, which, well, for one inning, not bad. And then they trot him out there for a second inning, and there's hard contact all over the place, including a line drive to Jesus Sanchez that he can't field. And then the hitting. The hitting. This is where you don't get let off the hook. All the pitching injuries, all the injuries throughout May, June, July, Yordan not being there. Okay, I get it. This is the lineup now. Like, there's no Jake is back. Yordan is back. Everybody's back. This is the lineup. And you went out and got two hits yesterday.
Yeah, Christian Walker, like, lead the league in strikeouts with runners in scoring position. Go ahead and do that. I've had to watch this botched pop-up in the first inning multiple times, and I have to fact-check myself every time. Runner on second, by the way. I think I said third.
It was on second.
It was on second. Yeah, that's right. But he pulls off, but that the ball lands behind him. Like, that's the part that was really, really, really annoying me.
Yeah.
That you got two guys, he pulls off, and yet the ball still lands behind him.
I don't know what
to
was
where there
going
would
on.
Have been. So even if he were trying to avoid somebody, there would have been a collision if somebody was going after the ball. It was just such a mess. And then he screws it up again later in the game.
Yeah, with Lance on the mound. Yep.
I don't know what to do with this team. This meltdown or this, and in a year in which they were doing a hell of a job scrapping it together.
Yeah.
With 22 regular season games remaining, they had a 77.1% chance to win.
Are you reading
the
this sentence
title.
That Chandler wrote in
the I'm team? Not going to read the whole sentence because he travels through time and space like he's, what was that show back in the 80s where with the time traveler guy? You remember that?
Vaguely.
Yeah, texters will remember.
Yeah, text
I won't read the whole sentence.
Okay.
This is Chandler Rome. FanGraphs gave Houston a 77.1% chance to win its fifth consecutive division title with 22 regular season games left.
Yeah.
Five losses in the subsequent 8 days have removed Houston as the favorite. They now have 42% odds to claim the AL
West. Read it.
Okay, I'm going to read the whole sentence. All right, I'll read the whole sentence.
Read the whole thing.
I'm going to read the whole sentence. Everybody, just honestly, because Sean and I both, tell me if this entire paragraph makes any sense to you. 67 days ago, they led the American League West by 7 games. With 22 regular season games remaining, FanGraphs gave Houston a 77.1% chance to win its fifth consecutive division title. Five losses in the subsequent 8 days have removed Houston as the favorite. The team boarded an Atlanta airplane Thursday night with a 42% odds to claim the American League West. 15 games remain.
The only sentence I understand in that whole thing is 15 games remain. That's the only at the end. I'm like, I know the situation from that sentence. There's 15 games left. 15 games remain. I got that. The rest of it is a brain pretzel. What are we doing? Boarded an Atlanta bound plane.
It's like I'm in the movie Voyagers. I don't understand where I am in time and space. I feel like I had to take a quantum mechanics class to figure out exactly what the hell was going on there.
Yeah.
He's just back and forth. It's 22 games ago, but
yeah, man. That's why Chandler hates radio people, man. Can't resist resist taking shots at radio people.
I can't resist taking shots at idiot radio guys, and then gives you gold like this. 67 days ago, they led the AL West by 7 games. With 22 regular season games remaining, Fangraphs gave Houston a 77.1% chance to win its 5th consecutive division title. So I go straight from, well, Kuwait, 67 days ago, they had 22 games remaining? And when I read stuff like this, I'm like, okay, Chandler's smarter than me. Why am I an idiot here? What am I not figuring out?
He's got to get paid by the word, right? He must have been his deal.
He doesn't write that many words. He writes like 4 days a week. I don't know.
No, but
he throws a bunch of stats out, and then without regard for an actual timeline, just kind of plasters them on there.
But my point is, like, I'm just eyeballing it, 50 words. Yeah. Could have been 30 easily. Like, I don't need to know they boarded an Atlanta-bound airplane Thursday night. I don't need to know that it was their 5th consecutive division title. 77.1% chance to win the division. It's all like 5th consecutive division title. Like, And you and I just touted The Athletic yesterday as the best money that we spend as radio hosts.
It's always me at 4 a.m. trying to figure out exactly where I need to time hop to figure out what happened in the game.
He does a good job. His information is really good.
But
he makes you work for it, man.
Many editors these days to work with these young writers to teach them how human
beings
operate.
Boarded an Atlanta-bound airplane Thursday night with 42% odds to claim the American League West. To claim it. You got to plant the flag in it, man. Like a land rush.
I was trying to figure out for the life of me. I was like, wait, 67 days ago there were 22 games remaining? I got to pay better attention.
No, dude. I had to read. I fully sober had to read that 3 times yesterday. And maybe it's us. Maybe it's us. That's why we're in this vocation.
We're getting old, Sean.
We're getting old. And that's why we're the radio guys, and Chandler is the writer.
Yes, you know? We're not up on a pedestal.
No.
Up on the pedestal, overlooking the lowly minions who prefer to maybe, set the scene before you jump in with a deluge of, not just stats, but stats that need to be presented to you in such a way as, hey, have the Astros had the second worst OPS? No. Only one team has had a lower OPS than the Astros. Henceforth, these 4 score in 20 days.
No, we're down here in the muck with the dullards spewing batting average. We're down here in the unsophisticated batting average crowd.
Yeah. We're just a bunch of cretins. We are.
That's right. All right, Football Friday off and running. Hey, we got to touch on Thursday Night Football last night. It felt like a Texans reunion going on out there. Packers and the Commanders. We got to hit that. We got to start digging into. I know the game is on Monday, but it's never too early to preview the matchup. DeMeco Ryans met with the media yesterday. His thoughts on the Texans opponent on Monday, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. We will get to all of that on a Football Friday coming up next.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Monday night is always a little different, right? It's always a special game because, you know, you're the only show on. Well, it used to be. Now we got doubleheaders. So it definitely changes a little bit. But Monday is always special. You know, the entire league is watching. Your peers are watching as they're preparing for their next week. So that's always, you know, in the back of your mind.
That was DeMeco Ryans talking about Monday Night Football. It is a doubleheader, but it's one where there's not an overlap in this one. The Texans... Yeah. They've got the floor to themselves on Monday night, starting at 6 p.m., everybody. 6 p.m.
I'll tell you what, the one thing about the primetime games is from a player's perspective, if you have a good game on Monday night, or if for whatever reason the announcers have chosen to kind of highlight you on that day, maybe you did a pre-production interview with them or something, it is pretty cool that you get just a boatload of texts and voicemails the next day from people that like maybe you haven't heard from in a while or anything. That part is pretty cool. And even if you even if you don't necessarily look at it as or you don't tell the media that you care about it, it's a nice, it's a warm, fuzzy feeling.
There's 20 million people watching these games.
And it is, when it comes to Pro Bowl and things like that, like when it comes to voting by your peers or anything else, people know what they see. And a lot more people watch Monday Night Football or Thursday night. More people nationally are going to see a Texans game on Thursday Night Football, for instance, than they otherwise would.
Yeah, for sure.
So it's, there's something to it. Whether you admit to it or not, there's a little bit of an ego boost and a little bit of pressure of just knowing that a lot of people that don't have NFL Sunday ticket that don't get a chance to watch you play are going to be watching you play.
It was funny because in the very same press conference, like four answers later, D'Amico's like, hey, man, it's just football, you know, whether it's Sunday after. Like, he has that answer about, yeah, it's really cool, Monday Night Football, and everybody's watching. And he's doing the right thing as a head coach. You do have to downplay it and remind your guys, like, no, it's – do that whole Gene Hackman thing. Like, the field's still 100 yards.
Yeah.
You know, it's still first and 10, not first and 15. Yeah.
Honestly, look, every coach wants guys – you want a team full of guys that play just the same in practice as they do in games. But, like, that's – it's human nature. When you're on display – It's a different level of performance. That's why I like with runners. Runners do better when they have a rabbit. They're very, very mentally tough and everything. But when you get into a competition or if you have a rabbit, there's a social aspect to it that makes it different. So there is something about when you've got guys who are prime time performers, that's a real thing. And it does. It makes for fun environments.
Quantum Leap is the movie you were trying to think of, or the TV
Quantum
show.
Leap,
the TV
yeah.
show you were trying to think
As
of.
As I sometimes with these young baseball writers try to travel through time multiple times within one paragraph, trying to figure out where the hell I am and what I'm doing. Yes, it felt like Quantum Leap, the
Seth,
TV show.
Seth, if you missed it in the opening segment, was trying to hop on an Atlanta-bound airplane with Chandler Rome to discuss the 42% odds the Astros currently have to win the American League West.
Yeah.
15 games remain.
Or 57 days ago when there were 22 games remaining somehow. That's the part that got me.
Yeah,
I was it was 57 days ago, there were 22 games remaining. Yeah. That's why I was like, okay, why am I so dumb? Why can I not figure this out?
All right, so let's get to the Bucks, man. D'Amico Ryans met with the media yesterday. Tell us about your opponent on Monday night, D'Amico, that Atlanta-bound plane is still in my head. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
The Bucs are a really, really good team, starting up with their front. Vita Vea is the guy that gets everything going. Adding Reddick on the outside, like really good group. Diaby, ton of great players, guys who can get after you in the running game, also in the passing game. Not only physical players, athletic guys who can, you know, swim gaps. Yeah, they do a really good job with their stunts on the interior. So tough job again up front, but that's every week in the NFL. So we have our work cut out for us.
What's your biggest concern with the Bucs defensively, Seth? Is it Vita Vea?
They blitz a lot. No, Vita Vea is a concern. Okay, there's two concerns. Vita Vea in the middle, because the Texans, they don't want to just run the ball. They'd like to be able to run the ball between the tackles.
Yeah.
Problem is Vita Vea, the nose tackle for the Bucs, just he's a space eater, but who's got pass rushing ability and everything.
Yeah.
He is peak male performance. You might not like the way it looks. You might look at him and think, I don't know, man, that guy's, what is he, like 25% body fat? Yeah. But he's out there with no gloves, no wrist tape, just out there throwing people around.
If he could play with no pads and no helmet, he would play with no pads and helmet.
And he probably would never get injured.
Right.
Yeah. But he's really, really good. And it's what the Texans would like to do is run between the tackles and help set up the play action, all of that. So that's the big challenge. But the bigger challenge as far as doing really devastating stuff, I think, overall is that Todd Bowles will throw some exotic blitzes in. And the Texans did a better job in pass protection than it felt like immediately after the game.
Wow.
But there were still some hiccups with picking up blitzes and with getting the protection right. And then at times guys just getting beat physically. But it's that mental challenge of getting the protection right. And then CJ figuring out what the coverage is as the Bucs have disguised the blitz, have sent a guy off the edge when CJ might have thought it was coming from the other edge. It's a lot of the same challenges they had last week versus the Rams. I guess the one benefit is that A, the Texans have learned some lessons by what they did last week, and B, you've got at least 1 week of film on the on the Bucks, and then you've got you've got a history with Todd Bowles, et cetera, et cetera.
Yep. D'Amico talked about some of the individual.
I'm sorry. One more thing.
Yeah. Just
the Bucks do not have the defensive line that the Rams did.
No.
I mean, that's they've got Vita Vea. And the edge rusher whose name I still have to nail.
They signed Hassan Reddick in the offseason.
Yeah, but you're talking about a different guy. It's not the same as the Rams. The Rams have just studs all over the place.
Yep. D'Amico talked about some of the individuals with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Was not planning on Emeka Ubuka being a problem in week two, but he was a problem in week one.
Ibuka, he shined in his opening game. He was explosive. He can catch the ball. He's a threat at all three levels of the field. That's where he shines. And everybody saw the two passes that he caught for touchdowns. Just an explosive player, fast. He moves all across the formation. So we definitely have to have eyes for Ibuka and also Mike Evans. We know those are their two top targets. Baker did a really nice job of finding those guys throughout that game.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, Diaby, who I was talking about. But Ibuka... I'm trying to be really careful this week because they've got Ibuka and Diaby and all of these names that I'm going to screw up at some point. Ibuka lined up in the slot a lot last week, and that's exactly where the Texans had issues with Puka Nacua lining up in the slot. Puka Nacua lining up in the slot, but also because Devontae Adams is there, it created some difficult matchups. So now you've got Ibuka. He's a rookie, but he was good last week. He's lined up in the slot, and he's offset by Mike Evans and trying to keep track of Mike Evans.
Do you Kamari Lassiter can play in the slot. Do you have Kamari Lassiter maybe follow him around a little bit?
Yeah, so you got playing on the outside then. I mean, that's I don't know. I think they'll get they're doing things to try to keep Jalen Petrie from being stuck in so many bad situations. But when Stingley got injured, that was an issue. And then when you're when guys just aren't playing, like some of the things they're doing to help Petrie out, it doesn't help when Petrie's not making the right decisions or when just he's too focused on the run instead of Puka Nacua. Some of that's fixable. Like there's going to be times in any game where you either have, not an ideal matchup with your defensive backs, or you're going to have a linebacker, ended up on man on a – like, it happens. It's a matter of how you manage it.
Here's my question for you about Petrie. Are the issues with Petrie in coverage mental or physical? And what I mean by that is, on that last play on that 3rd and 8, he was overly aggressive and got out over his skis and got beat by 5 steps. Is he physically capable of covering the – like, does he have the twitch and the explosiveness to cover these guys, or is it a mental?
Yeah, but he's got to be dialed in perfectly
so
with
his mental
read. So it's both. Yeah. Like, he's not a cornerback. Yeah. There's not, he just flat out isn't. So the Texans have to be really careful when they try to sometimes treat him like he's an actual slot corner or something. You can't do that with Petrie. So, but for Petrie, when they don't, the Texans don't ask him to do that all the time. But you got to be really mindful of the circumstances and the situation. So on that last play the Rams had, it's 3rd and 8. Yeah. They need a first down to win the game. If they run for 5 yards, then so be it. You gotta err on the side of on coverage on that play.
Yep.
So it's both. He's just got to be dialed in and not allow his weaknesses to hurt the team.
Baker Mayfield's been really good for a couple seasons now for the Bucs. Here's D'Amico Ryans on the Buccaneers quarterback.
Baker's done a really nice job. The thing that sets him apart, what I've seen him grow as a quarterback, is how he escapes the pocket, right? Whether that's keeping his eyes downfield to find open receivers or just scrambling to get the first down. He does a really great job. He's gutsy. He has everything you want in a quarterback, tough guy. He scrambles to make plays, run and pass. So you just have to play together. And that's what we preach all the time, is the rush, staying after it, playing together, and our guys in coverage, we have to make sure we're plastering and staying in coverage, covering the guys twice, but because we know he can escape from anywhere.
Boy, what a great reclamation project that's been for the Bucs. They signed him that year that they played the Texans – 2 years ago, Seth, he was on a 1-year, $4 million contract, Baker Mayfield. Yeah. I mean, that's been a huge success story for them.
And I think the big thing about him this year is you're waiting to see, all right, how much of it was also Liam Cohen, the offensive coordinator for the Bucs last year, is now the head coach of the of the Jaguars, obviously. But their new offensive coordinator.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah.
That's it.
Now their new offensive coordinator for the Bucs is Josh Grizzard.
Grizzard.
I assume he pronounces it Grizzard because Grizzard would sound too much like gizzard and that would be stupid.
Grizzard would sound like lizards, which is the bar that I like to hang out at.
That's pretty. That's true. Yeah, you could either go with lizard or gizzard.
Yeah, with two Z's. Yeah.
He's kind of an unknown. And they did, I mean, Baker Mayfield threw for 3 touchdowns in the first game. But it's a little bit of a wild card right now as to whether Baker can be the same guy with that new offensive coordinator.
Yeah.
Ibuka, and then Ibuka as well. Look, Ibuka had a good game, but he's still a rookie, and you don't want to have him like this continuation of a coming out party for Ibuka.
God, no.
against you. Yeah.
No. On the defensive side of the ball, we talked about playmakers on the defense. Here's D'Amico Ryans on Tampa Bay safety. I don't know if he still is, but at one point he was the highest paid safety in football within the last couple of years. Antoine Winfield.
Playmaker. Winfield is definitely a playmaker. Ty does a good job moving him around. He's a smart, versatile player. You can trust him. He moves around, put a lot on his plate. And he, man, that's the thing that jumps out to me. He's a playmaker. So we got to have eyes for him. And we just, at the end of the day, they have a lot of good playmakers. So you can't just watch, you know, one guy. They got a lot of guys on their defense. That's why they've been in good. They're a talented group. We just got to go out and execute our offense the proper way.
Yeah, there should be opportunities downfield if they can protect CJ. And I think, you know, D'Amico talked yesterday about some of the things CJ can do better, stepping up in the pocket for one. There were other times when he scrambled before he had to when there were guys open downfield, mm-hmm. and when he had a clean pocket. That's, I think, undoing some of the damage from last year in terms of CJ's presence in the pocket is only going to happen if he gets better pass protection.
Yeah.
And I think everybody yesterday was like bending over backwards to try to say that the offensive line did a pretty good job, this, that, the other. All right, like, look, they weren't as atrocious as it felt in the real moment. But let's not kid ourselves. Ariante Ursery got destroyed a bunch of times, and I'm not freaking out about it because he was a rookie playing on the right side after practicing most of training camp on the left side and playing in college on the left side. Like, that's gonna happen. But like, let's not sugarcoat it. There were some issues in pass protection. Cam Robinson, I don't care. You guys can throw me your PFF scores all day long. There were too many times where the pocket was compressing extremely quickly because Cam Robinson or others were getting beat. So it wasn't as bad as it felt in the moment, but it certainly wasn't good. So they got to hem up some of this stuff. And some of it was on CJ in the call beforehand or in mental errors by the running backs, whatever it might be. But they got to, if you want CJ to regain some of that composure in the pocket, you got to give him some semblance of stability for him to do it.
There are just certain things that D'Amico will say or people from the team will say, and after last season, I just don't believe them, which is we went back and watched the offensive line, and it was the offensive line did a good job. They said the same things last year. They said the same things last year, especially early in the season, even while the offensive line in the middle of the season was turning to trash, like real trash, like not moderate, like recyclable trash in the beginning of the year. This was like the trash you put in the other bin midway through the season, and they're still saying, well, the offensive line wasn't that bad. You know, we went back and watched it, and when we watched it, dude, that quote D'Amico had yesterday, we heard 10 times last year. I don't believe anything anymore that they have to say when they go back and watch the offensive line. I just don't. I watched that game. The offensive line wasn't good. Now, I'm giving them a pass on getting angry about it because it's all new guys. You did this shuffle before the game that you can take or leave it. I don't know. And it's a new system and everything's new. Everybody's doing their job for the first time. And so, and including CJ being the guy up at the line doing everything for the first time. So I'm not upset about it, but I'm getting a little upset that you're peeing on my leg and telling me that it's raining outside.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there's the encouraging thing about last week was when you watch a cut up of CJ's throws when he was under pressure, he made some brilliant throws.
Yes.
He still has all of that.
Yeah.
But as CJ himself will tell you, because he learned it from Tom Brady, and Tom Brady will tell you, is that it's really the simple stuff and the easy stuff, the mistakes you don't make. That's the stuff that really makes you a good quarterback and a good offense. And that's where they're just falling short And it's not that far short. It's very fixable. It was one game with a new offensive coordinator, new parts, all of that. Like, I'm not throwing in the towel on anything right now, no. But I got to recognize the issue for what it is. They've got to clean some of these things up.
Absolutely. No, you put it perfectly. That's what it, like, I'm here for it. I'm here for the improvement, but like, don't tell me how awesome it was. Like, it was not, it wasn't good.
Ursary had a bunch of welcome to the NFL moments.
I'm not mad at him, Ursary
had moments where he may as well have not even had hands, and that's one of the biggest shocks to rookie offensive linemen when they play in the NFL is like, oh, what happened to my hands?
Yeah.
Like, I used to, why are my hands not, what? I feel like I who amputated my arms right now?
Because
I'm completely powerless in this moment. Yeah.
Right.
Like, it's a different level of hand fighting.
Headlines are up next. Football talk on Sports Radio 610 presented by Paramount Plus. You can't count on much, but you can always count on Sundays with the NFL on CBS and Paramount Plus. Stream your local NFL game live every Sunday, all season long. Starting at just $30 for your first year. That's only $2.50 a month. Even I can do that math, a dumb radio host. Visit ParamountPlus.com/NFL to get started today.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines presented by Men's Tea Clinic.
All right, let's get to headlines. Let's start with the Astros. That was a bummer yesterday, man. I get so amped up for these afternoon games. It's one of the benefits of being done with your show at 10 a.m. is that you can really plan out the rest of your day around an Astros game. And Seth, this might have been, it was definitely the worst day game of the season so far because it was over in the first inning and then there was no fight in the Astros at all. And this is where they lose 6-0 to the Blue Jays. Kevin Gausman gets a complete game shutout, which in 2025, if you get complete game shutouted, that's like a no-hitter almost. Like yeah. These things never happen anymore because of the way the teams load manage pitchers. If you get two-hit shutout complete game by anybody, that's embarrassing. And this is where the Astros and Joe Espada are no longer off the hook. This is the lineup. Like, this, you've got all your guys back now. Like, you've got the, like, you've got, your lineup is now Jeremy Peña and Yordan in the two hole and Carlos and Jose Altuve, Christian Walker, blah 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 blah, bleebity blah, Yiner Diaz all the way down to nine. Jake Myers is back. He's your only 300 hitter as of a couple of days ago. There's no excuse. I don't care that it's Gausman. There's no excuse to go out and get shut out and put two guys on base the entire game.
It took him 100 pitches to do it. Yeah. And the Astros are amongst the worst in the league at the number of pitches they see per plate appearance. I'm watching Christian Walker, the strikeout with runners in scoring position yet again. Watching Jesus Sanchez. I mean, Jesus Sanchez, I don't how much of a hit did his WAR take just off of yesterday's game alone?
Dude.
Two botched balls in the outfield.
Yeah.
The strikeout after strikeout. Just awful, awful baseball yesterday. And then, you know, the one thing about Javier is obviously the Blue Jays got off fast and furious against Javier. The Blue Jays players were using a pitching machine beforehand to get ready for Javier, where they set the pitching machine up low to simulate the rising fastball.
Oh, that's smart.
Yeah, which isn't the same thing, because the rising fastball is an optical illusion, and yet your brain doesn't know any different. Like,
yeah.
You can see it over and over again, and it's going to look like it's rising. So they work with this pitching machine that's set up low, and it actually sends the ball up at them, so they get used to seeing that, you know?
Interesting.
And, yeah, the Invisiball, over time, I think, it's one of those things where once you learn how to manage the fact that it looks different than anybody else's other pitch, if you can get it in your brain how it's going to look, they can have some success versus it, apparently.
Oh, that's great, because the Astros only have Javier under contract for, like, 4 more years after this or something. Yeah, so that's good. Everybody's figured out the Invisiball. That's great. Can't wait to see what the next chess move is for Christian Javier here. So that was not fun yesterday. The Astros, the big news is they are now by virtue of a tiebreaker, they are in second place in the American League West. They trail the Seattle Mariners now due to they're tied in record, but Seattle's got the head-to-head. But the good news is the Astros have the Rangers and the Mariners at home next week in the final homestand and what will be the biggest homestand of the year. The two teams that are chasing you, because the Rangers are only a game back themselves, if I'm not mistaken. So this is it's going to be fun. I mean, these games are all now important. We're scoreboard watching. The problem is I feel like the Astros are the knife in the gunfight in this whole thing right now. Like the Mariners and the Rangers are red hot right now.
The Mariners, obviously the Mariners with the tiebreak, the Rangers two games back.
Okay,
I think the biggest thing about yesterday and really in the last few days, the things that's frustrating are when Espada feels the need to pull the infielders in the first inning. Because nobody trusts this lineup.
Nor should they.
But Espada has done that before things were as dire as they are perhaps right now. So that's something that, when things are going great, you're like, oh, Espada's a little quirky. But then, they bunted early in the game a few games ago. Yeah. Like, all of these things that you have to do or you get or you excuse because the offense has been so paltry and so bad. But at the end of the day, guys are just underperforming.
Yeah.
And you're not living up to your paycheck
That's
here.
That's it, man. These are the guys. This is what you signed up for at the beginning of the year, plus Carlos Correa. You've got Carlos Correa in this lineup now, too, thanks to the trade deadline. So
and on a day when Jordan goes over, like that's yeah. if Jordan goes over, you're screwed.
Yeah,
it's just by and large, more times than not, if Jordan doesn't bail you out of anything,
and that's
screwed.
The scary thing too is that Jordan has been the best hitter in baseball since coming off of the IL, and you're still not scoring runs in these games.
They're still they're one of the worst scoring teams in baseball.
Yep. Atlanta this weekend. So yeah, I mean Atlanta's bad this year. It's not a good team. You got to go in. You got to take two out of three from Atlanta, guys. Sorry, these are the rules. Thursday night football last night, entertaining. The Packers and the Commanders. So the nation got its, on a prime time game, got its first look at Micah Parsons in a Packers uniform. I know they played the Lions last week. Micah Parsons was impactful in this game. The Packers win this game 27-18. This Packers defense looks really good. Jordan Love looked really good. If you were going against Tucker Kraft in fantasy this week.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. That's one of those things, like, I can live with getting beat by, like, Justin Jefferson or Jamar Chase in fantasy. When you wake up Friday morning and you're going against the team that had Tucker Kraft going for six catches for, like, $150 and a couple of touchdowns, that's painful. The fun thing about this game, if you're a Texan fan, you got to watch a little Laremy Tunsil false start on a 2nd-and-5. See? Yep. I got texts from two DC area radio host right after that false start. They're like, huh? It's happening, isn't it? Yeah.
I know it.
And it's going to happen again and again and again.
If I remember that sequence properly, people love to say, what's the big deal with a false start? Well, it's 2nd-and-5. You get a false start, and all of a sudden it's 3rd-and-10. And all of a sudden Jordan Love has to hit a check down, and it gets snuffed out. And then it gets a lot harder to convert on 3rd-and-10 or 3rd-and-whatever it was. So there's that. And I think the other thing that people are going to be watching with the Commanders here in Houston is, all right, look, we've been through this rigmarole where the rookie has an incredible rookie season at quarterback. And then in the second year, things are a little bit more difficult. Yeah, things were more difficult for Jordan Love.
Just no doubt.
Jordan Love versus the Packers in his second year versus that Packers defense looks a lot like C.J. Stroud versus that Packers defense last year.
I was thinking the same thing, man. I was thinking the exact same thing.
Yeah. And yet at the same time, I would say Jordan Love's still – I think he's still showing all of those things where I think he's a potentially really good quarterback.
Jaden Daniels, are you talking about?
Yeah, Jaden Daniels. What did I say? Yeah.
You said Jordan Love. He's good too, but I think
Jaden Daniels is still very much has the potential to be a really, really good quarterback.
Totally,
The difficulty level just keeps getting ramped up.
It looked a lot like some of CJ's games last year, and that's how
I didn't like last night.
And Bo Nix, second-year guy who had a nice rookie year, looked horrible last week against the Tennessee Titans of all time.
Yeah, it turns out playing quarterback in the NFL is actually still pretty difficult.
It's hard, yeah.
Last night's kind of was annoying just because there were so many former Texans that were involved.
Oh, yeah.
And Noah Brown, of course. Every time Noah Brown makes a catch, immediately a portion of Texans Twitter is irate that Noah Brown is not on the Texans.
Yeah, yep.
And then Jacob Martin gets a half sack and does the old
Rock Boys celebration. Yeah, he's keeping that alive. The worst celebration in the history of celebrations.
Yeah. Who do I want my team to how do I want my defense to play? I want him to play like Pete Townsend.
I want to play like a garage band. Yeah, that's what we are. That was the worst. I hated the Rock Boys song. I didn't hate the people, but I hated them when they were doing the Rock Boys thing. And Jacob Martin getting a half a sack, by the way, not the whole sack. He shared the sack with Hall of Famer, future Hall of Famer Von Miller. But Jacob Martin, ironically, Von Miller didn't feel the need to go run over and start playing the old guitar with him, like all those, like, you know, like like Whitney Merciless and Barkevious Mingo and everybody else liked to do back in the day. Von Miller didn't feel the need to do it. Jacob Martin was the only one doing it, and I like to think that all his teammates were looking at him going, what are you doing?
You know what I like about this version of a good Texans defense as opposed to some previous ones? I didn't like that era where the position groups had nicknames. We had the Rock Boys going on.
Yep.
The linebackers were doing cosplay on the way into the stadium on game day.
The lunch pail crew on the defensive line.
Yeah, I could do without
t-shirts.
All that.
They had merch.
We don't have any positional nicknames right now, do we?
No, just one big swarmy-ass swarm, man, is
okay,
what it
good,
is. Yeah, it's just, swarm. That's it.
I just get this image of like those guys having their moms pack their lunch for them in a Transformers lunchbox before they come to work for the day.
No doubt. Hey, quickly, the injury report. Christian Kirk, Braxton Berrios, Jake Andrews, all no practice yesterday. So that's bad news on that wide receiver front. The good news, Ed Ingram, limited, so he's practicing. Derek Stingley, full go, not even on the injury. I was wrong on that. Remember I predicted yesterday he'd be limited with a hip? Not even on the injury report. This Derek Stingley, this year... What are we, year four Derek Stingley that we're in right now? It's made of steel, man.
Yeah. Well, they need, if I were the Texans, I'd be looking into that meth trailer that Matt Stafford's been using.
Yes.
That medical meth trailer that has all those kind of different things in there. It's working for Matt Stafford so far.
Yeah, it's got to be. I mean, we got the med center here. There's got to be a medical meth trailer outlet over near the med center somewhere, I would think. Good call. All right, into the 7 o'clock hour we go. All right. We get the rare Sunday here in Houston with no Texans game where we get to sit and focus in on the NFL. There are some incredible storylines for the NFL coming up this weekend that we all get to dial in on and watch. We will take you through the schedule. We'll do our circle of swarm. First circle of swarm with an actual body of work to work off of from the week before. We'll do that at 7:20. Stay there. You're listening to Pain and Pendergast.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.